Most of us at some point in our lives have probably watched a sex scene in a movie. Some of us many sex scenes over the course of time in many movies. And while occasionally you see a somewhat accurate depiction of how sex works in real life, more often than not you get some version of the following. Typically, the scene involves a man and a woman, since movies tend to be heteronormative. They tend to promote that most romantic relationships, if not all, are between a man and a woman, which of course isn't true. Though this has begun to get a little bit better recently. Anyway, typically with a man and a woman, the eyes lock, right? A kiss begins, and the clothing starts magically shedding off. It flows. No one ever fumbles with a button or a zipper. No one ever has a hard time getting a sweater off over their head. There's never any awkward difficulty getting a bra unclasped. The clothes just slide right off. And then there's the music, right? The two people involved almost never talk. The soundtrack typically kicks in, and the encounter moves forward almost like it was choreographed or something, with no need for any verbal communication whatsoever. Both people seem to magically know what the other person is thinking, what they need and want, and they move in perfect harmony. What a wonderful way to imagine that sex happens. And every once in a while, it does in real life. Often, though, real sexual encounters are a little bit messier. And did you notice? Well, I pointed it out, so I hope you did, that the talking is almost entirely absent, right? So no talking means that consent is almost never asked for. There's no, can I take your shirt off? Or, do you want to have sex? And that's a problem. The lack of communication is also a problem in the real world, of course, because we're not mind readers, especially if it's the first time or with someone relatively new to our lives. And honestly, even with people we've been with for a long time. We get this idea from our culture that talking during a sexual encounter isn't sexy, when really it should be an expected, normal, healthy part of the process. Even with long-term partners, something that felt great the last time might not feel good this time, so it's always good to check. So movies and media in general, they both inform and reflect our culture. Another problematic sexual narrative we see informing our culture and reflective of our culture in the movies and TV is the heteronormative focus on male-female pairing. Right, that's the norm. That's all that typically happens. But it's this idea in that male-female binary is the idea of men as aggressors and pursuers, trying to convince women to kiss them, date them, or have sex with them. All of these narratives and stories we see in movies, TV, and the media do have an impact on and reflect our culture and the people in our culture. Many men believe it's okay and normal to be aggressive in their sexual encounters, to continue to try and convince a woman to continue forward or to have sex, even when faced with soft no's, such as nonverbal cues, or maybe we should slow down a little bit. And even in the face of hard no's sometimes, straight out saying, after people say, no, I don't want to do this, they keep on going. To make matters worse, we culturally train girls and women who live in our country that they need to appease and respond to the needs of men above and beyond what they need and want. Part of the problem, as sexual consult educator Jacqueline Friedman wrote in an online article, is that we don't, as a whole in our country, teach young people what healthy sexual interactions look like. She writes, quote, "Sex ed in U.S. public schools isn't regulated by the federal government, and the resulting patchwork of curricula is a destandardized mess. 19 states require sex educators to teach that sex should only happen after marriage. 19 states. Only 24 states in Washington, D.C. mandate that schools teach any kind of sex ed at all, and only one, California, mandates that students receive education about consent." Now, fortunately, in our own Unitarian Universalist communities, we have stepped into the breach and we offer our whole lives, right? And this acronym is OWL or OWL, which is age-appropriate sexuality programs starting in kindergarten and first grade and that continue up through middle school, high school, young adult, and adult. And now OWL covers biology, of course, but more importantly, it offers a values and relationship approach-based approach to sexual experiences. So it helps our kids know what healthy looks like when they're ready, of course. But far, far too many of our fellow Americans don't know what healthy and respectful sexual encounters look like, feel like, sound like. Which brings us to last week. you've been paying attention to the news, you might be aware that there was an article published on the website Babe 8 days ago detailing a young female photographer's sexual encounter with actor Aziz Ansari. Ansari is most well known for his role as Tom Haverford in Parks and Recreation, and he also recently won a Golden Globe for his lead role in the comedy drama show he created called titled Master of None. Also relevantly, he's been a vocal supporter of the hashtag MeToo campaign. So going by the name Grace in the article, the photographer described her date and sexual encounter with Ansari in graphic detail, observing how she sent multiple verbal and nonverbal cues that she was not enjoying or into what was happening, and ultimately, at the end of the article, naming the encounter sexual assault. Based on Grace's description of the experience, which she wrote in that article, the encounter was actually probably not sexual assault, at least from a legal perspective. Ansari did not force Grace into the sexual acts she participated in. Unsurprisingly, though, there was backlash in the mainstream media. A New York Times headline read, "Aziz Ansari is guilty, period, of not being a mind reader, period." And the article that follows, authored by a woman, proceeded to make the case that Grace should have just left, that she could have left Ansari's apartment at multiple points in the evening if she was really feeling that uncomfortable. Now, there's a lot of truth in that assessment, which I'll address and we'll get to in a minute. But the article, and many others published like it, mostly by female authors, or many of them by female authors anyway, they leave out one of the really crucially important parts about all of this, which is the context of our culture. Based just on personal surveys of women I know and what they've heard from others, most women who've had heterosexual encounters in our country can totally relate to the story that Grace shared. It is a common, far too common experience in our culture for women to have experiences where they feel pushed, uncomfortable, gross, and violated, even if they consented in some form, or didn't say no, or did what they were asked despite being uncomfortable, or maybe had a few drinks and things moved too quickly. And even if they do object or say no, their healthy boundary setting is often perceived as inappropriate resistance, with men sometimes responding to requests to stop with some mixture of anger, teasing, name-calling, and continued aggression. One of the main reasons for all of this is the culture we have, that we're a part of, that teaches us that men should be aggressive and get their sexual needs met, and that women should be accommodating. As we heard in our reading this morning, Emma Gray, a writer for the Huffington Post, shared about two of her own sexual encounters with men, both of which left her feeling violated, even though they were legal, even though she had nominally consented for different reasons and in different ways both times. In the first encounter, right, her male counterpart continued to have sex with her, even though she was totally disengaged and disinterested, not moving, and had stopped moving underneath him. In the second encounter, when abruptly faced with her date masturbating over her, she decided it would be less difficult to just let him finish, even though she didn't like what was happening. Legal, and yet still violating. As Gray notes later in her article, behavior need not fall under the legal definition of sexual assault or rape to be wrong or violating or upsetting. Part of the challenge, Gray notes, is that the men and women involved in these harmful encounters often have very different experiences of them. Aziz Ansari was actually upset to hear that Grace experienced their encounter negatively. He stated this both in a text back to her and a later public statement, that he had experienced their time together as fully consensual and was, quote, surprised and concerned when he heard she felt differently. His text back to her included an apology that he was truly sorry. And yet, Grace felt so violated that she considered what happened to be sexual assault. We need to make some drastic changes so that we can bring ourselves back into good relationship with each other. It's a problem that even when well-intentioned, somewhat educated on this issue, men in our culture feel comfortable ignoring nonverbal cues and verbal cues that say no without actually saying it. Consent is vitally important, of course, and we are all also quite skilled at understanding the verbal, nonverbal cues and soft no's. I've got other plans that evening, or I'm not sure I'll be able to make it, or that sounds great, but I've got too much work to catch up on. Right? We know how to know how to read those cues when we come across them in our day-to-day lives. Men in studies have, of course, shown to be just as adept at women understanding those nonverbal signals and soft no statements. And yet somehow far too many of us men have been trained to ignore them in sexual encounters. That's why that New York Times headline that Ansari is guilty of not being a mind reader is problematic and representative of our broken cultural system. You don't have to be a mind reader to read nonverbal and soft no cues. Legal behavior is a good thing to strive for, but if that's the only bar, it's a bar too low. We also need to strive for moral and ethical behavior, including not pressuring others into sexual encounters or further steps in sexual encounters in which they are uncomfortable or disengaged. Emma Gray wrote later in her article, "If the hashtag MeToo movement is going to amount to sustained cultural change rather than simply a weeding out of the worst actors in a broken system, we need to renegotiate the sexual narratives we've long accepted. And that involves having complicated conversations about sex that is violating but not criminal." Which means, among many things, that men, and all of us, of course, but men in particular, because we've been culturally taught otherwise, that we need to start paying attention and caring about what our sexual partners' experiences are like. And we need to ask and talk and check in. We've already talked about the importance of consent, and some of the cutting-edge conversations about consent include affirmative consent, not just the absence of a no, but a checking for, a looking for, a positive, yes, I want to be here and doing this right now with you. An enthusiastic consent. That's actually a term some folks are using now, enthusiastic consent, and it implies some of the hoped-for behavior and understanding. If your partner is lying underneath you, not saying no or stop, but not moving, not engaging, or lying there limp, that's not enthusiastic consent. And you should be paying attention and stopping yourself and asking what's going on and if everything's okay. Now, this might seem like common sense or no kidding or duh to many of us, but it's not common sense or no kidding or duh to far too many men in our country and in our culture. The kind of experience Grace described with Aziz Ansari and the kind of experiences Emma Gray described in our reading, they're rampant in America today. And if we don't talk about it, if we don't have the conversations about what's normal and what's not, the cultural norms and the cultural teachings are not going to change. One of the ethical principles underpinning this legal and yet still violating kind of sexual experience, as we talked about in the story for all ages, is intent versus impact. Aziz Ansari actually wrote back in his text to Grace the next day, "I'm so sad to hear this. All I can say is it would never be my intention to make you or anyone feel the way you described. Clearly, I misread things in the moment, and I'm truly sorry." Which isn't okay, first step, it's good that he feels bad and that he apologized, but it's also not enough. Because even when we act with good intentions, we are responsible for the impact of our actions. And we need to be paying attention to the impact of our actions. And assuming Grace's relaying of events is accurate, it appears that Ansari was not at all attuned to the impact that his actions were having on Grace in the moment. And far too often, men are not aware of the impact of their actions on their sexual partners, and their culturally trained push to focus on getting their own needs and wants met. When aggression and coercion and pushy persuasion are acceptable and normal understandings of male sexuality, there is no call in that understanding for paying attention to the impact and to the feelings and experiences of women. Now, beyond intention and intent versus impact, there's also the plain and simple morality and ethic of care for those with whom we're engaging in sexual relations. If we care about our sexual partners, and we should care about them as human beings, even in a one-night stand or casual sex, and especially if they're our romantic partners, then this is a basic ethical and moral premise: kindness, care, respect. And yet our culture teaches men otherwise. And it teaches women to cater to men, it basically teaches us to go against this value that most of us probably hold quite dear. So we're going to have to learn some new skills and practice changing our own behaviors and expectations so that we can not only think, but also live and practice counterculturally. Going back to the critiques leveled at Grace in the media, yes, if she was an uncomfortable and happy and unhappy, I sure do wish, for her own sake, that she had said an explicit no. And I wish she had gotten up and left. Those would totally have been great things to do. But as should be clear by now, it's not that simple. It's very complicated, and there are so many social and cultural reasons why it was hard for her, and is hard for women, to stand up for themselves in these situations. Of course we want women to feel the agency to be able to get up and exit those situations. And we want to be careful not to blame the victim and put all the onus on them. They shouldn't have to be in the situations to begin with. So yes, we for sure need to try and change these cultural norms where women are taught to help meet other people's needs. And, you know, I have a 3-year-old daughter, and at some point, if she's ever in a situation like this, I sure as heck hope she's learned enough from her upbringing in our home and her OWL classes here at church that she doesn't need to put up with it in the least, that she won't put up with it, and that she'll walk away. I know, though, that we're going to have to do a lot of work in our home and here at church to counteract the cultural messages that she's going to receive, though, so that she feels empowered to do that. And I'm also sure going to work hard to change the cultural messages for men and what's culturally acceptable for men so that hopefully, she doesn't even have to ever experience that. Let me also say, as we're winding down, that while much of this sermon and much of this national conversation is focused on the heteronormative experience of a sexual encounter between a man and a woman, this issue isn't limited to male-female sex, and the social and societal pressures aren't limited to one gender identity or another. When I was in my mid-20s, I had a good friend named Michael. And one night, after we both had had too much to drink, though Michael was clearly worse off than I was, I walked him home from the bar, mostly to make sure he got home safely, because he was having a hard time staying upright. On the way home, while I was supporting him, he was very handsy, and I kept gently stopping him and laughing it off. But I didn't want to go inside with him when we got back. I kept saying no, and he kept trying to get, just for a minute, I need your help, I can barely stand. So I went inside with him, and then somehow, I'm still not to this day quite sure how, we ended up in Michael's bed with both of our pants off. And he was touching me, and it was really uncomfortable. And I did finally get up and leave, and I definitely felt violated the next day, and gross and unhappy, and it had a pretty bad impact on our friendship. So all this is by way of saying that while many of these issues fall into gender stereotypes and heteronormative sexual encounters, the underlying principles and social pressures can and often do apply to all of us, even those of us without the cultural training to accommodate. Now, this has been a fairly deep dive on a pretty specific and important issue, and the underlying interpersonal skills, the underlying interpersonal skills such as healthy communication, the underlying principle of intent versus impact, and the underlying moral and ethical call to treat each other with care and respect, these are applicable across our entire lives. Healthy communication is a challenge across many different relationships and situations. And sometimes it's hard and doesn't need to be, but we have to try. But talking about what we want and need and listening and responding is such an important life skill. Intent versus impact has many applications. For example, well-meaning white people will sometimes say things or act in ways that are harmful to people of color. And it's our responsibility not to get defensive and say, oh, but I didn't mean it that way. I mean, we can say that, it's good to know, but we also have to take full responsibility for what we did and acknowledge the impact. And as imperfect human beings who struggle with our own pain and shame, and who sometimes, because of that pain and shame, act less than kindly towards those we care about or anybody in our lives even, remembering to pay attention to and care about the feelings and experiences of other human beings is important to remember at all times. As we go about our days, as we go about our lives, may we do the work necessary to live counterculturally and change our problematic culture so that no one feels like it's normal to be aggressive and pushy to the point of harming their sexual partners. May we do the work necessary to live counterculturally and change our problematic culture so that no one feels like they need to accommodate this unhealthy aggression, so that everyone feels like they can say no and get up and leave when they need to. May we set the bar higher for ourselves than behaving just based on what is legal instead of striving for what is moral and ethical. May we pay attention in all areas of our lives to both our own intent and the impact of our actions. May we, imperfect human beings who regularly fall short and make mistakes, may we continue the work of doing our best to live into our values of care and kindness. The world is so often a holy place, and relationships of all kinds are so often beautiful, meaningful, and powerful experiences. May we do the work to reduce the harm we cause and increase the love and kindness we create. May we continue to do the work of building the world we dream about.